ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Coach Gio and Coach Frank. They sit down and talk with me about leagues and a few other topics regarding soccer in North Texas. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Frank Corpus. I am originally from Mexico City. My soccer background started pretty young. A lot of my family played professionally out there in Mexico. I went off to the Marine Corps, continued to play in the Marine Corps, came back, started coaching my kids. Currently, now I am with Massfield FC in a goalkeeper director capacity. Also, 2010 through 2008 boys soccer coach and academy director for their academy. Now, on the other side in Dallas, with my goalkeeping academy, I am the goalkeeper director for Club America Nido Aguila out there in Dallas.
Yeah, my name is Gio Vasquez. I'm technical director and co-founder of Villarreal North Texas. Grew up playing all in North Texas. Fort Worth area mostly is where I'm from. But when I started playing, there really wasn't any teams worth playing for in Fort Worth. We were driving an hour and a half to practice three times a week. And that's kind of where my mission started, man, to make sure that the kids in my community had the same opportunity that I was blessed enough to be able to go look for Hopefully they don't have to look as far to be able to get that.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. As I said when we were talking earlier, I feel like there's a lot of things that can change in North Texas. Frank, we talked about the lack of information out there, and I know that you guys were talking heavily earlier about all the amateur level leagues that are in the area. As a parent that has small kids, and I have a 9-year-old that is soccer obsessed, there are so many leagues here. So can you guys give some information on maybe and where to look for so families can go find these leagues and they can go take their players to go watch them? Because I feel like the more we watch soccer, the more we get excited for it. Maybe that's just my kid, but I feel like that's most little kids or younger players. So where would you guys recommend these players, families to find information?
Well, information, I mean, there's a, especially, I mean, Facebook and Instagram, if they want to watch players 16 to and older play in a semi-professional scene or area, they're just everywhere. There's teams in Fort Worth, Arlington, Dallas, Irving, and it's just all pretty much social media based. Then there's also indoor facilities. We have some here in Mansfield at Apex. Every so often, you have professional indoor soccer teams come out from Mexico City or it's out there in Mexico to play professionally indoor, just in there. And I think it's affordable. I think it's $5, $10 just to sit there and watch them. Some of these games are free. So the opportunities to watch are there. It's just advertising for them is extremely bad.
With that being said, other than social media, is there like leagues you can recommend? Or like you said, the Mansfield's facility has it there. Is there places they can start looking to keep their eyes on this information?
Well, I know locally there's a Metroplex Premier League. They started a couple of years ago. They have several different, I think they have two divisions, several teams all throughout the DFW. And they are also partnered with GCPL, if I'm not mistaken, Gulf Coast Premier League. That one, so the MPL feeds into the GCPL, which is teams from all over the coast. And they travel out of state, within the state, but it feeds into that. And then the UPSL, which is another local league, it's had a really good start, but right now I feel like it's not what it used to be. It could be better. It just grew too fast and didn't develop like it needed to, but that's still there. So the United Premier Soccer League is there, and then there's the MPL locally. They have websites that they can look at, too. Social media. But yeah, they have all their information on the websites.
Awesome.
And, now, and most of those leagues now are also building women's versions of it. So like I know,
yes.
You know, there's a team from Fort Worth called South Star, you know, at DKSC, and a few of these local teams also starting to create the women's side. So Ian, once like some of the leagues he just mentioned, all of them have a website. So you can check any of the leagues he mentioned on their website and you can see the schedules and it's simply just finding the name of the leagues and all these amateur leagues have websites and schedules that you can look at, including even the women's versions of it. Off the top of my head, I'm not going to hit them all on the head like Frank did because I don't know all of them. But the women's is like WSL and then the women's Metroplex Premier League, I think also has a women's version of that. And I think there's a few leagues that are also sistering whatever male leagues are being created here.
Awesome.
Right. So the women's Metroplex Premier League, that one, I believe it could be an extremely good league, especially for all the young local players that are taking some time off or looking to stay active when they're off. Because that league, because there's such few teams here in the DFW, they go all the way to Arkansas to play out there. So that one actually is out of state. They go to Arkansas and back. They go down south. But that Women's Metroplex Premier League, that has the potential to be a really good league, especially for the younger players who don't want to go play in college and want to stay active and want to maybe possibly be seen to another professional teams that are playing at higher levels. I know some of those players that were playing for that league are now playing professionally indoor with women's teams. So that's a really good venue as well.
Crazy. I mean, I didn't even know this, and I feel like I've been pretty well entrenched in the world of soccer around this side of DFW. I mean, I'm learning a lot here just listening to you guys because I follow so much soccer now. Now, my big part of this podcast is to educate families. Gio and I had a very intense conversation. I call it the hard pill to swallow when I interviewed him with Villarreal. Now, how do you think we can help parents better understand the chaotic, the drama of North Texas soccer? Because I feel like I have no problem saying, I feel like the system's broken in the United States as a whole. And with us being the hotbed that we are currently are right now with soccer, I think we have a lot to offer here and a lot of talent here. And we go 2,000 miles away to go play a team that is literally 50 miles, 20 miles from home. And you see this all right. the time. These teams go to Vegas and they're literally playing the same team they play in their league play locally. And I find it ridiculous. I mean, I'm not saying it's not worth the money to have your kid exposed to it, but not if you're playing the same teams that you're playing in every tournament that are local. And maybe I'm just have a warped view on this because I look at it as if you go to the finals and you're playing two local teams from DFW, what's the point of going to Vegas to go play in a tournament?
Yeah.
Where do you guys stand on this?
I agree with what you're saying, but to be honest with you, there is no fixing. There's no right or wrong answer. There's nothing that's kind of a trick question for Frank and I, in the sense that anything that we tell you is an opinion, and we could only suggest and try to help those parents try to navigate and figure out something for themselves. But there is no understanding you're not going to understand the system, and trying to, it's going to give you a headache, and you're going to be going in circles. For the system is broken, but it's broken all the way at the very top. So everything that we do at the bottom, until the people at the top acknowledge it, a lot of the stuff that we do at the bottom is going to get swept under the rug. I mean, that's just the reality of it, because you're going to create some of these players, like Frank was mentioning earlier, that then another club is going to, he was talking about a young man, but they do this with young boys, right? You create a player till he's 12 years old. A big club takes him. They put their tag on him because they're the ones that got him exposed. And everyone at the bottom trying to do it the right way never even gets credit or gets seen or anything like that. So as far as trying to fix it, it needs to be fixed from the top. And everything we do is we can only navigate and help the people that are closest to us, but our reach could only go so far before it's exhausting. So, you know, everything we say, just put that in mind, Ian, that it's a matter of an opinion. And we're going to tell you what we think is the best approach to truly help the parents. But it's also a point of view and an opinion.
And this is where I feel like I don't want to set you guys up for putting you in a difficult spot, because I feel like there are so many places that families turn to for information that I feel send them down the wrong road. Frank, you and Facebook. I talked about people having great playing credentials, but doesn't mean they're a great coach. And we get sucked into playing for club X, Y, and Z because they're a big club, or we get sucked into, oh, they have such and such representing them, I want to go play for that club. When at the end of the day, it's just the name. It's just the badge that they're wearing. And I know, Gio, when I interviewed you, you talked about that. It's more than just the badge that they wear. It is the development that they're being put into that player. You talked about them developing a player until they're 12, then the big clubs swoop in and get them recognized, and they get all the glory for it. And like you said, it has to be fixed from the top down. But as a parent, it's frustrating. I mean, my kid's only 9, and I'm already seeing the stressors of the future for him coming out of this, because you have phenomenal coaches, and families won't leave the great coaches. But sooner or later, in order for their player to get recognized, I will use the ECNL model. And maybe my understanding of this whole model of the league play in the Metroplex is wrong. We have our local leagues. They always post them in all the social groups that you have the MLS, you have USL Champions League, then you have USL L1 with MLS Next Pro. And it just goes down the list of the pro leagues in the United States. But even on the local level, when you look at what these leagues do, if you take ECNL, like, you have to be so big to participate. And if you want to participate with them and you're a smaller club, you have to merge with another club, but where some other club's badge in order to have your players participate in it. Now, with the leagues, like, what advice would you give parents when they're looking at it with the clubs? Because I feel like ECNL excludes so much talent, but because you have to be so big to play in it, I feel like it only excludes, how do I phrase this? It only includes people with the means and the clubs with the means to participate. It excludes the smaller clubs, excludes the smaller local regional areas of the country that might have the next Landon Donovan or Ricardo Pepe or Acosta. I mean, we have so much great talent in this country, but I feel like it's being missed. So how would you advise parents to navigate that?
I mean, that is an extremely hard situation. And and unfortunately, the parents have something to do with a big part to do with this, because they drive this, that they are creating the demand for it, or they are giving everybody what they want. So they have these league directors, they create these leagues, and only these specific clubs can go. And the parents, they all want to chase all the wins, the trophies, the coaches. So by them following suit, they create this atmosphere where it excludes everybody else. Because I can go to a rec team or a rec league and find a handful of players that can outplay a lot of these big club players. It's all about the money. Well, bottom line, that's all it is about, the money. And it's unfortunate. So parents have to start and actually look at themselves and sit there, okay, what is the reality of our expectations versus what we really want? We want our son to be professional, but can he? Or is he just doing this for fun? Those are the questions that parents have to ask themselves before they start pushing, because without the demand, it wouldn't have this issue.
No. Okay, Gio.
No, I agree.
And that's where I feel like parents need to have a better understanding and education, because when I coached for the little stint that I did, the year and a half I coached at a club level, best advice I was given, if you're winning more than 500, having a 500 average, you're in the wrong league. If you have worse than a 500 average, you're still in the wrong league. You want to be having that happy medium, winning 3 to 4 to 5 games out of 8 games. And if you're winning more than that or losing more than that, you're in the wrong division of the league, because it gives the wins, but it also gives the failure and the defeat to develop these players, because that means you're playing against good teams and you're playing against bad teams. And as parents, this is the mentality that I have, and my wife and I very heavily talk about, is that we don't care if Landon's on a winning team or Thea's on a winning team. We care about development. Thea's team, she's 5, and they're playing 4v4, and they play a diamond. Majority of the girls on her team that have been there for like the last 6 months get that diamond formation. They know that if one player moves one way, they have to push over. And if the back defender pushes over to the right, the left defender has to come back and cover the defender spot. And they get this at 5. They aren't winning every game. Sometimes they're getting slaughtered. But as parents, having an older kid where we've been through this now, we realize that that is the motion that we need to see our kids going through. And how do you explain that to the masses, that if they get the development now, so when they are U14, U15, the winning will just come natural? And I personally, I'm not in the trenches enough to know, other than talking to parents. And when I talk to them, I think they just nod their head and say yes to me just to shut me up, because I like to talk. But I don't know, what advice would you give to parents then to have the mentality going into it about the development? Because I feel like that's the part we're missing, is that we're chasing that 25-cent medal versus chasing the next 30 years of develop, or the next 5-6 years of development for the lifetime of playing. So how would you advocate for parents to understand?
You want to think again about that, Gio, or you want me to say what I think?
I mean, I think we could both say it in a minute, because I bet we're probably pretty close. You know, I go back and you're preaching to the choir. First off, second off, I've said it 1,000,000 times. You know, those leagues are irrelevant. Is your kid learning what they're supposed to learn? And as long as people could be honest and ask themselves those questions, like Frank was saying, hey, make sure that they are asking these questions. What does their kid really want? Or is it them that want it? You know, like those are those difficult questions to ask. And one of those things is, hey, am I willing to give up that big fancy jersey that just so I can post on Facebook? or am I going to go with the coach that's going to develop my kid? And at the end of the day, when they get older, these coaches, they understand that there's pockets of players. A great example is Christian Pulisic. Christian Pulisic never played for any of these so-called teams, right? At his time, it was the academy, the MLS Academy and the Academy League and the DA and all of that. And he always stayed in his local club until somebody recognized him. And to me, it's he learned everything he was supposed to learn for him to stand out in that moment. And he didn't have to play for those big teams. So when we talk to parents, and again, I said that when we had that conversation, is find somewhere where they learn what they're supposed to learn, their basics. I see some of these I don't know if they're clubs or they're skills trainers where they're just doing nothing but skills moves. But then you come into the games and all they can do is that. The coaches at the next level don't care if you can do 72 step overs and you can do a helicopter. They want, can you thread the needle and find this pass? Is your vision aware enough to switch the field? Can you take a touch with both feet? Do you know how to play defensive, offensive? Are you multifunctional? Can I put you in the game in one position and move you? Those are little things that the elite coaches are looking for that get overlooked by just choosing a jersey or by going to, oh, this team, they one of the biggest things is how many kids play on the youth national team. And there's a club that runs around and flexes. Hey, we had this many players play for the national team last year. Be realistic. Is your kid going to be one of those players? Until they are ready to be that player, they don't need to go somewhere where they're going to get drowned, where they're going to get, they're just going to get overwhelmed by the numbers and they're not going to get looked at because they're on the fifth team. The kids that is on that national team, the U.S. national team, they're on the top team. And they've been groomed to that role for the last 5 years. So by them using that to convince you to go put their jersey on is not going to automatically put you in that pool. And that being realistic and thinking about that, well, they're using this to recruit me. You know, I'm in a good place. Coach Frank takes care of me. My kid's been learning every year. He's getting better. So why would I walk away from him? Why would I go to those big clubs? And so, I mean, that goes right back to that hard pill to swallow. But being honest, I think it's the hardest thing, because we all want our kids to be in the spotlight. We all want our kids to be messy. And sometimes as adults, we take the fun out of it for them.
Yes, exactly. And so, yeah, you got it. You got a lot of this stuff that I was going to say. But yeah, going into what you said, you go through a lot of these practices or sessions that coaches are having, and you see them just running in lines, passing back and forth. Okay, yeah, you can pass back and forth, but why don't you add something that will actually be an in-game situation? Add a triangle, add a diamond, add a square. Get some movement that actually does something that you will use in a game. That's how I run my practices. If you would want to watch one of my practices, they're not just standing there. They might be three or four in a group, but they're constantly moving, either to space, from space, dropping. I mean, that's what it has to be. Now, that's where players learn and develop in practice. If you just have them doing skills, when you put them in a game, what are they actually going to do? They're either going to just do the skill or wait for their coach to tell them what to do. And that's what you don't want. You want to teach them in practice. So that when it comes to the game, the coach is just sitting there guiding, not telling, but guiding, you know, what needs to happen. The player should automatically click. And that's what parents need to be quiet on the sidelines too. A parent's role is to support their player, not to tell them what to do, kick the ball, run. No, a player's role and a parent's role in the game is to encourage their player. Also on the way home, and on the way to the game. That's what burns out a lot of these players. That's where the develop ends. Okay, my dad is yelling at me. My mom is saying this. Okay, I'll just do what I want. But it all starts in practice. Everything starts in practice. It has to be game-like. Every situation has to be game-like, something that will happen in a game. Yes, you'll do a step over. Yes, you do a scissors here and there. But what after? What did you do before that to get to where the ball needed to go? How do you know where to pass it to? And a lot of these coaches aren't teaching this. They put the same players in the game day in and day out because those are the ones that already know how to do it. Everybody else is sitting on the bench and the parents are happy with it. Every player might get playing time because if they're not putting what they learn in a practice in a game, they're not developing. That's where the freaking test is. in the game. Show me what you learned. Show me what I did right. Show me what I, as a coach, need to fix for you to be able to learn that. A lot of coaches don't ask themselves those questions.
I think this is the part of the problem with our coaching licensing. Like you talked about at the top, it's the Dutch model of play, practice, play. And most coaches, okay, you have to let them learn through the game. And as I'm sitting here watching through this tryout season, my 9-year-old's going to tryouts. They're like, oh yeah, you have to trust the system. Let them learn from the game. And I'm like, yeah, you have to let them learn from the game, but you also have to give feedback. And I think that's what you're saying, Frank, is that if there's no feedback to the players on what they're doing right or wrong, they can't learn from the game because they're going to continue doing the same unhealthy touch or the same movement to move the ball around and not understanding why they're failing. Maybe as they progress to the older age groups, to the U14 through U18 and up, they get that where they have the critical thinking skills to go through and learn from their mistakes. But the younger age groups, telling these coaches, being told, let them come in and practice and let them learn from the game. And all they do is they let them scrimmage. They do a technical session in the middle, and then they go back to scrimmaging and nothing connects at all. I don't know if you, like you said, Frank, you said all your practices have game-like experiences. How do you advise parents that don't have, like my wife and I, we didn't come from soccer. We don't have that technical background. What questions or view things they need to be looking for, or Geo, what should they be looking for up ahead on what's coming up, or what they should be looking for with these coaches? Because I feel like all practice looks great. They're doing what they need to be doing. But when you actually start breaking it down and you have an understanding, well, those practices weren't that great. They weren't educational. They were just playing kickball, so to speak.
Well, I mean, especially at the younger ages, let's say 6 through, or some of these players are starting as young as 4 through 6. What should you be seeing in practice is them having fun with the ball, moving it around, you know, passing back and forth, how to properly pass the ball, how to receive the ball. You try to put anything else at that age group and they will shut down. At that age group, what I teach the players is, how do we move around on a game? I tell them to break. Everybody knows what an airplane looks like, right? What are the main four parts of an airplane? You have the front part where the pilot is at. You have two wings. And you have a tail. Now, does a plane fly if it's all together? No. There's different shapes of planes, but for the most part, you have to keep that same shape. And that's how I get the kids to understand at that age how they need to move up and down the field. The tail can move up front, and now it becomes a front, but you will always have two wings and a tail. And then you start adding the other positions as they get older. But it should always be fun for them at that age group. I mean, that's pretty much how it starts. That's how it started for me. For my son, he grew up and he wanted nothing to do other than just kick a soccer ball around. He slept with like 10, 15 balls in his bed. And now he just runs around like nothing. But it's all with the fun. And it doesn't need to be extremely complicated when they're that age. It's just passing back and forth, moving up and down the field, and then just breaking it down as simple as possible for him. An airplane. Let's fly like an airplane on the field. Might not do anything, but they will learn they need to keep their space. Because right. If you watch a lot of the players that age, they're all just like a little beehive. It's all bunched cats together. Exactly. So that's as simple as I can break it down for players that age. Fly like an airplane and pass the ball to your friends, going up and down the field.
So as
the older they get, the more interested the passes get. Go ahead.
As they progress, then what's the next? Like, you go from 4v4, the airplane model makes perfect sense. They go to 7v7. I mean, you still keep that same mentality because you still need people spread out. And I mean, I'm visualizing right, in my so head. It never leaves.
7v7, you still have the same four players you have. You can play three in the back or two in the back, one in front, two on the side, one up top. You will always have that basic shape of an airplane. Even when you have 4-4-4-2, it's like an airplane. You have your front, two pilots, your wings, and your tail. You put the dots together. They line up like an airplane. So that for me works for all ages. Now the where it comes tricky is the what they do in each position. And that's where you need to sit down and not just have practice, but also have educational practice, 30 minutes or 20 minutes, bring a notebook, something, have a Zoom meeting, go over what you need to go over. So when they go to practice, they were thinking about all that. I create little cards. I take pictures of them, send them to the players. Look, these are the formations. These are the movements of each player. and position. And I tell them, keep in mind, these are just suggested movements. Doesn't mean that this player can't go all the way up, but then one player has to drop back. So it's all about just communicating with the players at the different age groups and just breaking it down to where they understand it. Some will get it faster than the others, and some won't.
Yeah, and to add to that, when they get a little bit older, Ian, like I mentioned to you before, some of the things that you guys can look for have nothing to do with soccer. I think the body posture of your player when the coach is talking, is he grasping every word? At the end of the day, I think we all have felt this one way or another, right? When you connect to your coach or you connect to your boss, you're going to play different for that person. You know, me personally, I feel like I'm a good coach to my players, not because I know X's and O's, but because I can connect with them and get them to understand exactly what I'm saying. When you ask me about Anthony Vardy, I think he's one of those coaches that does that. You know, if the team is standing together and the coach is explaining the drill and your kid is looking around, it means that there's something about that coach that they're not. It doesn't matter if the team is winning. It doesn't matter how much the team is winning. It doesn't matter if they're posting cool tournaments and trophies at the tournaments. But at the end of the day, when your kid's not playing because your kid's not understanding that coach, or they're not clicking, or there's something about your player that the coach isn't appreciating, and you know they're there for numbers. Okay, and you know as much as you know, we could talk about a lot of other soccer things. Being honest with yourself about your kid is important. Okay. Is your kid grasping every word that coach is saying? The coach, I went from playing for a coach that I knew was willing to die for me. So guess what? I was willing to die for him. Every word he said, I took if I read it straight out of the Bible. And then the next year I go to play for a coach that I felt did not care about me. And I went from being the best player I ever was to not even being able to connect and click in games because I did not have that connection. And some people hang on too long to teams they shouldn't because maybe that team is winning, but your kid's not developing. You know, that relationship that they build exactly. with this coach it's more important almost than the soccer that they teach. Because it could be a tactician. It could be Pep Guardiola. There's players that could not play for Pep Guardiola. Are you telling me Pep is a terrible coach? No, it's the fact that they could not connect. And there's lots of stories of great players going to play for Barcelona when Pep was there. And in months, not only did he get kicked out of the starting lineup, but they were finding him a new home. And it was a matter of that player and the way that player was brought up connect with this player, with this coach, and the way they communicate. Some coaches yell, some coaches don't yell, some coaches are saying bad words, some coaches are saying I love you. Like, is that coach approaching my kid the way my kid understands information? And no matter how good or how bad the team is, if the answer is no, you need to find a coach that does. And I think those are the type of conversations that I don't hear a lot of people talking about. You know, like I mentioned before in the podcast, when people are looking for a team, the first thing they do is they go look at the leagues and their standings. Mm-hmm. That's the most ignorant way someone, excuse whoever I'm offending on this podcast that's listening right now, but that is a very ignorant way to go about looking for a new team. And if you go to one practice and you're like, I hate this guy or I love this guy, that's also a little unfair. So really, you know, be honest with yourself. You know, I be honest with yourself as a parent. Is this what my kid needs? Is winning a trophy and not playing what my kid needs? Me personally, I would think not. You know, speaking with Frank a little bit, I think he would agree with me. Ian, I think you agree with me as well. But for the parent, is winning that trophy worth their kid not developing? Well, that's on them.
I agree with you there. I think what's missing is, I think there's no, how do I describe it? There's no tool, there's no guide for parents to go by. We only listen to other parents that we've met before we became more understanding of this whole process. It's the best advice I was given is go sit up. And this is what I hate about the tryout timeframe. Like, you have to know what teams you want your kid to go play on before the tryout season starts. So you can go watch how they coach during games. Because during tryout season, there's not many local team matches going on. So for tryouts to start in June, you make your decision by July, you've maybe never seen this coach coaching a game at any level. And when we started to look at teams, we were actually going to go watch them coach before Orlando was even trying out for them, because it's not worth taking them to a practice if we don't like how they're going to talk to the players during a game at any circumstance, winning, losing, or whatever it may be. I mean, there is a coach that we liked. We just didn't like some of the other background noise on that team. And but the coach was a great coach because he talked to the kids. He encouraged the kids. He went out there with a plan, and that's all he cared about. He didn't care if they won or lost. He cared about if they did what they want, what he wanted them to do in that game. I recently was talking to a coach, and he says, I've never lost a game. And I was kind of like, what? I know your record. He goes, no, we go out with a goal. We go out with a plan. And if we execute that plan, that's all that we won. We could lose 30-0. We won that game as a team. Maybe not in the books, but as a team, we won. And now this coach has one of the nationally ranked teams in the country. And I look at it, it's like, you have the right mentality. How do we foster this and give it to the parents and ingrain it in the parents? Like, give it time. What is, I think the best analogy someone said, like, you may have the biggest, fastest player at 7 years old. By the time they're 14, they're probably going to be the slowest player on that field and not the most technically advanced, because we were so focused on just winning the game on the physical side and not the technical side. And I don't know how to ingrain that from parent into parents enough.
Unknowingly, we're giving our kids crutches without them needing it. Right? Like you said, they that kid one was good enough so long just being physically good that from 12 to 14 when they were supposed to, from 10 to 14 when they were supposed to get their technical ability, he focused on being fast. And when the kids caught up, he was technically behind.
And he missed your golden years. I mean, someone said
golden years to learn that, like, it's proven fact to your technical ability. You're going to learn it from your 10 to 12 to 14, 15 years old. After 14, 15 years old, that's when you start gaining your IQ. You know, a coach should no longer need to tell you what foot to receive the ball with. Like, at that point, the coach should be more of a manager than a trainer. And some of these kids are getting to 14, 15, 16 years old. And I see this all the time. And they were super athletic, super fast, been playing their whole life, but can't take a first touch. And they come from, their parents are frustrated saying, hey, well, I'm tired of my kid always being the best kid on this team and having to carry the team. And if my kid doesn't score, my kid is you know, feels bad because the team lost. And then they come to my team where they're absolutely the most athletic and they can't even find the field for playing time because they're lacking in every other subject of the field. And it was like, well, I'm sorry that your coaches used you in the wrong way from 10 to 14. But right now, this group isn't learning that stuff. This group of girls, this group of boys is onto the stuff they're supposed to be learning. So it's, you almost feel bad not having time to go back for every single child. And you try to hope they can catch on, but there's a lot of bad habits if you get a player for the first time by 16. You know, receiving the ball with the right foot and the right surface on the foot, believe it or not, those players that are next level players that make it look easy, they learned that when they were 8 and 9. When they were 15 and 16. When they were 15 and 16, they were learning runs and styles of play. And I see 15-year-old players receiving not only with the wrong foot, but with the wrong surface. If you're 17 years old, I'm sorry. You pass your golden years to learn that. And I don't think a lot of people see it that way. I think a lot of people that have that athlete child, their egos get built and hyped by them scoring the two goals to win 2-0 and people forgetting that they had 13 chances one-on-one and they toe poked it and they missed. And the two that they scored were they shot, it hit the goalie, it came back, it hit them and went in. But that player scored the two goals. At the end of the game, everyone's patting that parent on the back. So that parent, just like the kid, their ego and their self-esteem goes up, but it's almost false because they're gratifying you for the moment when you haven't learned anything. So I think we need to see all the picture and not just the moment. You know, we become, what's the saying? We become victims of the moment. And I think that happens way too often.
It does. It does. I have a perfect example. I there's this goalkeeper. She is extremely athletic, and she plays as a guest player in older teams because she's very athletic. But as a goalkeeper coach, I see her, and I've told the coaches, that athleticism will only get her so far, because once the other keepers develop and catch up to her, everything, the technical part that she's not paying attention to and that her parents are ignoring because they miss practices, it's going to catch up, and she's not going to be called up anymore to play for any of these teams. And parents, they don't see that. They go with what they see at the moment and what they feel. Oh, my daughter this, she plays here and that. My son this and that. No. But all you're doing is hindering their development. And in the long run, it's going to really affect them mentally, physically, and emotionally. And unfortunately, sometimes that comes back to the parents. And they'll blame the parents for this. And then that vicious cycle continues, because then they'll have a child. And they'll see that promising athlete in their child. And they'll do the same thing to them. And it's like, it just never ends.
Yeah, it's like hitting a wall. It's like coming down from, it's like a drug. You come down and you hit the ground so hard. It's like, what happened? I was on cloud nine. I was the best of the best. Now I change teams, I change leagues, or I join high school, and all of a sudden, I'm not the best anymore. There's a kid somewhere that's not as good as that goalkeeper that you mentioned, that's slow, that's out of shape, that's listening to every detail, to the hand techniques that you're talking about, because they know that's the only way they can keep up. And then someday their body's going to grow into shape and they're going to have the technique, and you're not going to be able to ever compete with that player again, because, hey, these players that were at the back that you were laughing at, that you didn't want a part of your team, are now the best players because they caught those lessons that these people overlook. And I think you hit a great point right there when you mentioned that the parents just overlook because their player's doing so well. And that can be very, very devastating in the long run.
Exactly. I mean, bottom line is, I think a lot of these issues that we have with soccer and the system stems from the parents. I mean, I hate to say it because I'm a parent too, but I used to be a little bit like that when my daughter started playing or when my oldest kid started playing. But then, you know, I realized, I'm doing the same thing that was being done to me. Why do I keep doing that? But it's when people start to realize, especially parents, what actually needs to happen, what needs to be going on. Then I think the people at the top will see, okay, what's not working? What do we need to fix? Why are we not getting the same results or the same interest that we were getting before? Oh, they finally realized that we were just making money out of it. We need to really fix it now. But I think that's where it's got to start with the way that people actually look at it. And parents are the ones that are pushing all these kids to this. There wouldn't be all these leagues. There wouldn't be a need for all of this if there wasn't a demand for them. And the parents create that demand.
Yeah. And the money, you know, I think when the people from above, it starts affecting the checks that they make, they'll start paying attention, you know. And I'm a big time diehard Mexico fan, and they've been very disappointing lately. But one thing that I'm very proud of that I think they did recently is the fact that nobody purchased tickets to that third place game in Las Vegas. And at that, Mexico fans been yelling and screaming for years and decades. They wanted to be heard. And the very first time it affected their pockets, the next day by 8 a.m., that coach was dropped and there was changes. And until things like this happen more often, until it affects their pockets, they're not going to get taken serious, right? Because as parents and adults in the system, we can complain all we want. But guess what? We're going to be at those ECNL tournaments. We're going to be on those ECNL teams. And as long as there's enough teams to field, as long as there's enough clubs to pay those fees, they're going to feel like what they're doing is they're on the right track. They're not going to realize what they're doing is wrong, because money wise, it's not showing that they're wrong. As long as the money keeps showing up, until some of these teams start going to other leagues, right? Classic Girls Classic League. I'm not as much into the Boys Classic League, but the Girls Classic League over the last 2 or 3 years have been making huge changes. Huge changes. Yes. They started to see their pockets get hurt. They started seeing clubs completely leave their leagues and their organization. And right now they're at a place where they're putting teams like me in a hard situation, because they're catering and kissing ass to the big clubs to keep their teams. They're begging teams to keep their teams in the Girls Classic League. And before, for the longest times, they would tell people to go F off, that it was the best league in the Met. Like, there was no other place you couldn't go. And now when all these other leagues started popping up, the FCL and FDL and ECNL and ECNL, RL, North Texas, well, teams started getting options. Classically, the Girls Classic League had no option but to change. And now they're in a situation where last year or 2 years ago, there was divisions where they didn't even have enough players to do the qualifying weekend, and teams got automatic buys for the first time that I've ever been here. So you're telling me there's not enough teams that want to come qualify for this prestigious classic league? Well, yeah, because they were in their old set in their ways, and they were bullying people because people had nowhere to go. Now people have somewhere to go, and the Girls Classic League had no choice but to do things like that, to kiss ass, to beg teams to bring teams. So now they've changed the rules where teams can use an unlimited amount of guest players. Last year, I played a team that brought 11 guest players. All year, wow. I played teams that are playing with 7 guest players, 8 guest players, because that's how the Classic League is convincing these big teams to continue to pay their fee, because they're making it super easy for them to compete, because if not, they'll lose those teams completely. So now I'm showing up. Okay. I'm first in my league. So every single team that I played in my league is not the same team everyone else played, because every time I played a Renegades, a Solar, a Sting, there were 4, 5, 6 girls showing up with ECNL patches on their shirt. So those are the things that the Classic League had to do to kiss ass, because they're finally hurt their pockets. And that's the key. That is the key. Whenever what happened to the Academy League and the DA, right? People started, their pockets started getting hurt. When there started being options, they jumped ship and they created a whole league of their own. And if you look that up, you can see that story. There's articles on that. The people at the top will not start making changes until it affects their pockets. And the Girls Classic is a great example. You can go see that right now. They're brandishing go to their website right now. And new changes and new leagues and elite leagues. All they did was change the names. Okay. They turned Division One into Elite Division. They turned Division Two into Division One. And they turned Division Three into Division Two. And now that was their change, but nothing changed. There's no new teams. They literally only changed the name. All the teams I was playing in Classic D1 last year, I won the league. I'm going to play the exact same teams in the Elite Division, exact same teams.
So none of them get relegated?
Huh?
None of them get relegated?
Well, there used to be a system, but there used to be a line, Ian. There used to be a line.
But not anymore.
There's not a line anymore. So when there used to be D1, D2, D3, and then Plano 1, Plano 2, and there was always a buildup and a line. And every time when the season was over, there was like 20, 30, 40 teams in every age group trying to qualify to get into the Classic League. And now they're handing out buys left and right just for teams that are willing to fill them, because there's so many options now. Off the top of my head, I can name you 6 or 7 leagues you can play in. Me, myself, I'm playing, and with one team, I'm playing in 3 and 4 of those leagues because they allow you to. So now, Classic League used to be the highest league you can play in. Well, now there's teams playing, like that team that I'm speaking of now is playing NL Pro, and they're playing in a few other leagues. Well, guess what? The Classic League isn't my very most important league anymore. And there's a lot of teams that are feeling that way, because there is no path. You win the Classic League and that's it. You join the NPL and you join the NL Pro. Hey, there's finals, there's regionals, there's nationals. Now that's intriguing to people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, they used to give a big medal, a big trophy for the Classic League. They don't even give you that no more.
It's crazy.
They just give medals.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode with Coach Frank and Gio. They're very open and honest with their conversation, very candid with everything. I think this is what's missing in our soccer community, is the openness and candidness with parents to coaches. I don't think these two have issues with that, but it's a topic that we need to talk to our coaches about, our players about, and each other about, being open and honest and looking for the best for our players.
And sometimes that is not always hearing what you want to hear. But as you guys listen to this week's episode, remember there's one more part of this conversation for next week. I'm hoping this will be a continuing on dialogue with multiple different coaches throughout the year. I'm hoping to have another one in the near future. So thank you for your time. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.